Treasure Island by Robert Louis Stevenson. Part 6. Captain Silver. Chapter 28. In the Enemy's Camp. The red glare of the torch lighting up the interior of the blockhouse showed me the worst of my apprehensions realized. The pirates were in possession of the house and stores. There was the cask of cognac. There were the pork and bread as before, and what tenfold increased my horror, not a sign of any prisoner. I could only judge that all had perished, and my heart smote me sorely that I had not been there to perish with them. There were 6 of the buccaneers, all told. Not another man was left alive. 5 of them were on their feet, flushed and swollen, suddenly called out of the first sleep of drunkenness. The 6th had only risen upon his elbow. He was deadly pale, and the blood-stained bandage around his head told me that he had recently been wounded and still more recently dressed. I remembered the man who had been shot and had run back among the woods in the great attack, and doubted not that this was he. The parrot sat, preening her plumage, on Long John's shoulder. He himself, I thought, looked somewhat paler and more stern than I was used to. He still wore the fine broadcloth suit in which he had fulfilled his mission, but it was bitterly the worse for wear, daubed with clay and torn with the sharp briars of the wood.
"So," said he, "here's Jim Hawkins, shiver me timbers. Dropped in like, eh? Well, come, I take that friendly."
And thereupon he sat down across the brandy cask and began to fill a pipe.
"Give me a loan of the link, Dick," said he, and then when he had a good light, "That'll do, lad," he added. "Stick the glim in the wood heap, and you gentlemen bring yourselves too. You needn't stand up for Mr. Hawkins. He'll excuse you, you may lay to that. And so, Jim," stopping the tobacco, "here you were, and quite a pleasant surprise for poor old John. I see you were smart when first I set my eyes on you, but this here gets away from me clean, it do."
To all this, as may be well supposed, I made no answer. They had set me with my back against the wall, and I stood there, looking Silver in the face, pluckily enough, I hope, to all outward appearance, but with black despair in my heart. Silver took a whiff or two of his pipe with great composure, and then ran on again.
"Now you say, Jim, so be as you are here," says he, "I'll give you a piece of my mind. I've always liked you, I have, for a lad of spirit, and the picture of my own self when I was young and handsome. I always wanted you to jine and take your share and die a gentleman, and now, my cock, you've got to. Captain Smollett's a fine seaman, as I'll own up to any day, but stiff on discipline. Duty is duty," says he, "and right he is. Just you keep clear to the captain. The doctor himself is gone dead again, you ungrateful scamp," was what he said. "And the short and the long of the whole story is about here. You can't go back to your own lot, for they won't have you. And without you start a third ship's company all by yourself, which might be lonely, you'll have to jine with Captain Silver."
So far, so good. My friends then were still alive, and though I partly believed the truth of Silver's statement, that the cabin party were incensed at me for my desertion, I was more relieved than distressed by what I heard.
"I don't say nothing as to your being in all hands," continued Silver, "though there you are, and you may lay to it. I'm all for argument. I never seen good coming out of threatening. If you like the service, well, you'll jine. And if you don't, Jim, why, you're free to answer no. Free and welcome, shipmate, and if fair can be said by mortal seamen, shiver my sides."
"Am I to answer, then?" I asked with a very tremulous voice. Through all this sneering talk, I was made to feel the threat of death that overhung me, and my cheeks burned and my heart beat painfully in my breast.
"Lad," said Silver, "no one's a pressing of you. Take your bearings. None of us won't hurry you, mate. Time goes so pleasant in your company, you'll see."
"Well," said I, growing a bit bolder, "if I'm to choose, I declare I have a right to know what's what, and why you're here, and where my friends are."
"What's what?" repeated one of the buccaneers in a deep growl. "Ah, he'd be a lucky one as knowed that. You'll perhaps batten down your hatches till you're spoke to, my friend," cried Silver truculently to the speaker.
And then, in his first gracious tones, he replied to me.
"Yesterday morning, Mr. Hawkins," said he, "in the dog watch, down came Dr. Livesey with a flag of truce. Says he, 'Captain Silver, you're sold out. Ship's gone.' Well, Maybe we'd been taking a glass and a song to help it round. I won't say no. Leastwise, none of us had looked out. We looked out, and by thunder, the old ship was gone. I never seen a pack of fools look fishier, and you may lay to that if I tells you that looked the fishiest. Well, says the doctor, let's bargain. We bargained, him and I, and here we are, stores, brandy, blockhouse, the firewood you was thoughtful enough to cut, and in a manner of speaking, the whole blessed boat from Cross Trees to Kelson. As for them, they're tramped. I don't know where they are.
He drew again quietly at his pipe.
Unless you should take it into that head of yours, he went on, that you was included in the treaty, here's the last word that was said. How many are you, says I, to leave?
Four, says he.
Four and one of us wounded. As for that boy, I don't know where he is, confound him, says he, nor I don't much care, we're about sick of him. These was his words.
Is that all, I asked?
Well, it's all that you're to hear, my son, returned Silver.
And now I am to choose?
And now you are to choose, and you may lay to that, said Silver.
Well, said I am not such a fool, but I know pretty well what I have to look for. Let the worst come to the worst, it's little I care. I've seen too many die since I fell in with you. But there's a thing or two I have to tell you, I said, and by this time I was quite excited. And the first is this. Here you are, in a bad way, ship lost, treasure lost, men lost, your whole business gone to wreck. And if you want to know who did it, it was I. I was in the apple barrel the night we sighted land, and I heard you, John, and you, Dick Johnson, and Hans, who is now at the bottom of the sea, and told every word you said before the hour was out. And as for the schooner, it was I who cut her cable, and it was I that killed the men you had aboard of her. And it was I who brought her where you'll never see her more, not one of you, the last on my side. I've had the top of this business from the first. I no more fear you than I fear a fly. Kill me if you please or spare me. But one thing I'll say and no more. If you spare me, bygones are bygones. And when you fellows are in court for piracy, I'll save you all I can. It is for you to choose. Kill another and do yourselves no good. Or spare me and keep a witness to save you from the gallows. I stopped, for I tell you, I was out of breath. And to my wonder, not a man of them moved, but all sat staring at me like as many sheep. And while they were still staring, I broke out again. And now, Mr. Silver, I said, I believe you're the best man here, and if things go to the worst, I'll take it kind of you to let the doctor know the way I took it.
I'll bear it in mind, said Silver with an accent so curious that I could not for the life of me decide whether he were laughing at my request or had been favorably affected by my courage. "I'll put one to that," cried the old mahogany-faced seaman, Morgan by name, whom I'd seen in Long John's public-house upon the quays of Bristol. "It was him that knowed Black Dog." "Well, and see here," added the sea-cook, "I'll put another again to that, by thunder, for it was this same boy that faked the chart from Billy Bones. First and last, we've split upon Jim Hawkins." "Then there goes," said Morgan with an oath, and he sprang up, drawing his knife, as if he had been 20. "Avast there," cried Silver. "Who are you, Tom Morgan? Maybe you thought you was cat me up, perhaps. By the powers, but I'll teach you better. Cross me, and you'll go where many a good man's gone before you, first and last, these 30 year back, some to the yardarm, shiver me timbers, and some by the board, and all to feed the fishes. There's never a man looked me between the eyes and seen a good day's after it, Tom Morgan. You may lay to that."
Morgan paused, but a hoarse murmur rose from the others.
"Tom's right," said one.
I stood hazing long from one, added another. "I'll be hanged if I'll be hazed by you, John Silver." The end. Read by Rick Kistner. We're lit to go. On the web at fcit.usf.edu.